Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today, you are the guest. What's that you say? You don't have the face for radio? You're not prepared? Don't worry, I'm not going to ask you to answer any questions while you're driving or working out. But this is a second asked and answered that we've done, and specifically concerning vaccine mandates. So we have collected listener questions concerning the current status of federal vaccine mandates. Whether you have questions about the OSHA 100 plus employee ETS, the CMS vaccine mandate rule, or the federal contractor vaccine mandate, we've taken all the questions that listeners have sent and turned them into today's episode. So sit back and let us answer the questions that you've had at the top of your mind concerning vaccine mandates and the best way to institute them in your organization, or to determine whether or not they even apply to your organization and your work environment. So with that, let's jump right into it. Many of you are likely thinking, I hope that we're not going to have to listen to Tani talk at us for the next hour. The good news is, however, that I have with me today, Lucy Stalnicker, who has graciously agreed to read your questions. And it is my hope that by the end of the show, that you're going to have answers to all the questions related to the current status of the federal vaccine mandates that are currently in play and how those mandates potentially interrelate to the policies that you already have in place, state rules and regulations in the jurisdictions that you operate, and general principles under the Americans with Disabilities Act and Title VII. So with that, let's get started. Lucy, what's our first question?
Hi, Tani. I've separated questions into categories. Our first category of questions relate to the OSHA ETS mandate, and then I have questions concerning the CMS mandate and federal contractor obligations. Does that work for you?
That works out perfectly, Lucy, and I think that'll be a great way for our listeners to zone in on exactly what works for that organization. So jump right in.
All right. So the first question is, I've been following the OSHA ETS, and it's my understanding that the rule has been struck down. Is that correct?
Thanks, Lucy. That is a great question. And this is going to be one of those moments where words matter. So the OSHA ETS has not been struck down, but it has been stayed. And what that means is that a court, and in this situation, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, has found that right now OSHA cannot continue forward with implementation of the ETS. So a lawsuit was filed in the Fifth Circuit. Argument and briefing was held, and then the Fifth Circuit issued an order that very specifically directed OSHA, kind of the government itself and the administrative agency, noting that the organization could not continue forward with implementing the different dates in which different aspects of the OSHA ETS would become applicable. And they said this for a number of reasons. One, they said that the mandate itself, the ETS, is over-inclusive because it includes every workplace with 100 or more employees, even if that workplace has never had an issue with COVID-19. They also said at the same time, the mandate's under-inclusive because they say, what's the magic number of 100 or more employees? There's no reason why we're choosing this number. Is there any more risk at an organization that has 99 employees than there is with 100 or more employees? Additionally, the Fifth Circuit said that an ETS, so there's very specific rules that an administrative agency, an OSHA, must follow when they create an emergency temporary standard, which is what ETS stands for. An emergency temporary standard can't be used as a stopgap measure. And in this situation, the Fifth Circuit felt as though that's what was happening. In part, the ETS notes that it recognizes and OSHA recognizes that there are different implications as to how COVID will affect a work environment, whether it is in the financial industry or it's in the meatpacking industry. But that right now it wasn't in a position to create individualized standards for all the different industries within the United States. And accordingly, they were going to use this 100 plus ETS. And the Fifth Circuit said, nope, you can't use an ETS as a stopgap measure. They also said that the whole ETS flunks the cost-benefit analysis. At this point in time, OSHA is estimating that compliance costs will be around $3 billion. And then at the end of the opinion, they talk about two constitutional concerns that they have, specifically related to the Commerce Clause and police power. And that becomes important because as we talk about how we move forward as it relates to this ETS, understanding whether or not the United States Supreme Court potentially could be dealing with this issue is important. So, Lucy, I mean, your question was, has the rule been struck down? And it hasn't been struck down. The Fifth Circuit issued this stay, but then a bunch of other people filed lawsuits. And when a bunch of people file lawsuits, the courts say, wait a second, let's send this to one court so that we have one court issuing a ruling that is in line for all the different jurisdictions since it's a federal court. And that's when a lottery occurred. And the lottery ended up giving the Sixth Circuit out of Cincinnati the case to deal with. And at this point in time, so at the time in which this will originally air, the Sixth Circuit has a motion pending before it, which is asking for removal of the stay. So the United States government, OSHA, has asked for the stay to be lifted. And the briefing on that will be finalized on December 10th. And the government has asked for an expedited process. And the Sixth Circuit has denied that, which means that we won't have a decision before the 10th of December, and it likely will be many weeks after the 10th of December since no expedited schedule has been entered into. So, Lucy, super long answer for what seems like a really easy question, but the answer is right now the rule has been stayed. OSHA is not implementing the 100 plus ETS, but it hasn't been struck down. It has not been struck down. It just is not being enforced in this moment. So what's our next question? With the understanding that I just gave a super long answer to that first question, Lucy.
So, well, if the OSHA ETS has been stayed, does that mean I don't have anything I should be doing right now?
I am hearing that question a lot, Lucy, so I'm glad that you chose it out of our listener comments as one that we should be answering. The answer, in my opinion, is no. There are still things that you need to be doing. And the reason for that is because OSHA has now set forth a standard, and they've said for employers with 100 or more employees, this is what our recommendations are. Now, yes, that has costs associated with it, but recall that throughout the whole pandemic, we've talked about the fact that OSHA's general duties clause continues to apply to all organizations. An organization has a duty and obligation to provide a safe and healthy work environment for employees. I believe that right now we've now gotten information about what a safe and healthy work environment looks like for an employee. And accordingly, there's going to be aspects of the ETS that we are going to want to take into account and likely incorporate into our policies and practices moving forward. So like I said, Lucy, that is a really good question. For those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today we are taking listener questions and answers as they relate to the vaccine mandate and how it applies to different work environments. At the end of the episode, if you realize that you have questions and still haven't been answered, of course, send us an email and let us know. But for now, let's get back to the questions we've received. Lucy, what's our next question?
The next question, I think, builds off the answer you gave us just a minute ago. And that is, what exactly are the requirements that a company needs to consider or implement when we are dealing with the OSHA ETS mandate?
That is a really good question. And again, unfortunately, I have a long-ish answer, but I'm going to try to do kind of just the high points. So the OSHA ETS includes a number of different requirements that an employer is going to have. One, it's going to have a policy regarding vaccinations and kind of COVID in the work environment. So creation of a policy is the first thing. Second, it's going to require that employers determine the vaccination status of all of its employees. So it has to go through that process, and it's going to have to give notice to employees as to what that process is going to look like. Third, the employer needs to support employee vaccinations. And there's going to be financial elements as to how employers are going to be required to support that vaccination process. Next, so the fourth element of it is employees who choose to be unvaccinated, and this is not for protected reason, just unvaccinated, you're going to have to require them to be tested weekly if they are coming into an office environment or interacting or engaging with other employees. Next, you are going to have a process in place regarding how you respond if an employee has a positive test and require removal of that individual from the work environment. For our unvaccinated employees, we're going to have to require that they have face coverings. We're also going to have to provide notice to employees of a number of different things, including key things to know about vaccines, anti-retaliation rights, criminal penalties for false vaccination cards. And then there's two additional things that an employer would have to do under the ETS. One is a reporting obligation to OSHA, and they would have to report fatalities and hospitalizations caused from COVID when the employee got COVID at work. So that determination would have to be made before the report of the fatality or hospitalization occurs. And then the last element of the ETS is making different forms or information of records available to employees. So, Lucy, I'm sure I could spend multiple hours talking about all the intricacies related to each of those expectations, but that is a general overview of what the ETS provides.
All right. The next listener question is, the news keeps saying that OSHA has a vaccine mandate under the ETS. But it's my understanding that we don't have to require that an individual be vaccinated. But if they're not, they're going to have to take additional precautions. Is that correct?
That is correct. And it's one of the things that I believe has created a ton of confusion right now in society as a whole, at least in the United States. We have the federal contractor mandate come out, which requires vaccines. There is no testing opt-out. But then the OSHA vaccine mandate, and this is why I have a problem where it says a mandate. There's no mandate. But what's being said is if you're unvaccinated, if an employee in your organization is unvaccinated, he, she, or they is going to have to wear a face covering, and they're going to have to be tested on a weekly basis. And if they don't come into the office, if they're remote employees, they wouldn't have to be tested unless they do come into the office. So to call the OSHA ETS a vaccine mandate, I think it's easy and a fast way to discuss it. And that's what everyone hears and how it's been referred to. But OSHA is not mandating the vaccine for all employees. They're simply saying that if an employee is unvaccinated, that there are going to have to be additional steps that we take as an organization to protect that individual. So that is a really good question, Lucy. And unfortunately, we've come to our first break. So with that, we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Let me ask you a question. How do you feel about genetically modified ingredients?
Don't like them.
Artificial flavors and colors?
No thanks.
Clean ingredients.
Now that I like.
When you care about what's in things and what's not, shouldn't your vitamins be clean too? Sundown Vitamins are all clean all the time. Non-GMO, free of gluten and dairy, with colors and flavors from real food. We even have USDA certified Sundown Organics and kids vitamins too. When you're living clean, choose clean with Sundown Vitamins at supermarkets, drugstores, or on Amazon.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host from Verrill, Tawny Alvarez. And today we are taking listener questions and we are providing you with the answers. Now, questions as to life and creation. Nope, you're not going to hear that. We are talking specifically about federal mandated vaccines as they relate to COVID and the current pandemic. So we are talking about federal mandates, specifically the OSHA 100 plus ETS mandate, the healthcare ETS, the federal contractor vaccine mandate, the CMS vaccine mandate. We have started our first segment and we've been focusing in on the OSHA ETS standard. And Lucy has been asking all of the listener questions. She's organized them for us to get right down to business. And with that, Lucy, what's the listener's next question?
So our next question is, my company hovers between 95 and 105 employees at any given time. Most of the time we're around 98, but sometimes we're around 101. When we discuss an employer having 100 or more employees, how is that determined?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, because prior to us getting the regulations from OSHA, there was a lot of thought that what OSHA was going to do is do a 6-month look back period, in a similar vein to how the family medical leave is viewed. So in the OSHA mandate, however, starting on November 5th, okay, that's the date that the ETS became effective. From that point forward, if there is a period of time in which you have 100 or more employees, okay, the mandate will apply. So on December 5th, you have 94 employees. The mandate doesn't apply. But on December 8th, you have 101 employees. Okay, from December 8th forward, the mandate's going to apply. Even if you drop down below 100 employees in February, the mandate's still going to be applicable. Now, this is where information about an ETS becomes really important. An ETS normally can only survive for 6 months. It is supposed to be used only during an emergency, and it's just for a short period of time. So in this situation, arguably, it should only remain applicable until around the beginning of March, okay? But recall right now that we have a stay of the provision. If, however, the stay is lifted, if at any point after March 5th you had 100 or more employees, the ETS is going to apply to you unless there is an evolution or change in the ETS itself. Great question, Lucy. What's up next?
Even though there is a stay of the ETS, is there a chance that the Sixth Circuit will rule on the issue prior to January when the vaccine or testing aspect of the mandate takes effect?
So I tell people all the time that every time I've tried to be a fortune teller as it relates to COVID or what the federal government's going to do, I've been wrong. But I think it's highly unlikely that we are going to have a definitive ruling from either the Sixth Circuit, or if we do have an opinion from the Sixth Circuit, a determination from the Supreme Court, whether or not it's that the Supreme Court will hear the issue or it will deny cert prior to the beginning of January when the testing obligations would take effect. And you're probably thinking, well, is it the beginning of January, Tanya, or kind of what date exactly are we looking at? And the exact date that we are looking at as it relates to that aspect of testing for the unvaccinated, that's January 4th of 2022. So I think it's highly unlikely, but at the same time, I'd say don't quote me on it, but don't quote me on it because I've been surprised before. Lucy, what's up next?
So even though the rule provides an alternative to the vaccine mandate, can my company still have a policy that requires employees to be vaccinated without regard to the ETS standard and the ability to test weekly?
Yes, is the short answer. And I know people are laughing because I never give a short answer. But yes, a company can still have a policy that requires vaccinations as long as there are provisions that provide exemptions for individuals who fall within a protected classification, such as having a disability or a medical condition that's going to limit their ability to be vaccinated, or they have a religious belief that would limit the ability to be vaccinated or tested or otherwise comply with a policy. So as long as you provide exemptions regarding the different policy that you have in effect, then that's no problem. So Lucy, I'm guessing that now you're going to ask me something about the ADA or religious accommodation, but I'll let you ask the question. How about that?
Well, we have a couple more questions concerning the OSHA ETS. So who is responsible for paying the costs associated with the test if a person is unvaccinated?
Well, I unfortunately have a horrible legal answer, and that is it depends. And the reason why it depends is it's going to be more of a state-specific review. So under the ETS itself, it indicates that the employee is going to be responsible for payment. So that's what the ETS provides. But the ETS doesn't overrule state rules or regulations related to payment for medical testing. So if you live in a state or if you have employees in a state that has a medical testing statute, that rule regarding who pays for it is going to be applicable. So in Maine, there is a medical testing statute, and that would require the employer to pay for the costs associated with it. Next question, Lucy.
Are there any rules or requirements concerning what type of test an employee can or must take if they're not vaccinated?
This relates very closely to, of course, the question that you just asked. And I think it's important because there are areas of the country where either there is a shortage of tests, or if there's not a shortage of tests, there's issues regarding pharmacies and their ability to meet the demands in the jurisdiction to do the tests, or if it's not kind of scheduling or interaction, the financial aspects of it. So we know that an employer would need to pay. We also recently have statements from the Biden administration concerning a requirement that health insurers would be required to pay for testing. I have not seen any of the specifics regarding how that would work. But as to what would be an appropriate test, it has to be a COVID test that's been cleared, approved, or authorized, including anything that's under an EUA by the US Food and Drug Administration to detect current infection with SARS-CoV-2 virus. So it's a viral test. And then it also needs to be administered in accordance with the authorized instructions. So the instructions within the test have to be followed. And then the final element, and this is the most important element as it applies to employers, is the test can't be both self-administered and self-read unless it's observed by the employer or an authorized telehealth proctor. So the employee can't simply do the test at home alone. They would either have to do it on a Zoom with the employer, they'd have to do the test at the employer location, or we'd have to have an authorized telehealth proctor who is part of the process. So that is the type of test that they must use or take. For our listeners who are only just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today we're taking listener questions concerning federal vaccine mandates. We've spent most of the episode so far talking about the OSHA ETS standard, but we're going to jump into federal contractor and CMS standards. Lucy, what's our next question?
So what if I operate in a state that has a law or rule that a company cannot mandate a vaccine? Does that law, how does that law interact with the current ETS?
That's a great question. And you know that I always talk about the importance of understanding both state and federal laws that applies to your organization. The ETS itself says that it preempts any state rule similar to what you've just described that would limit a state from restricting an employer's mandate. So right now, the ETS says that it rules and the governor mandates would be overruled by the ETS. Lucy, what's our next one?
So does the ETS require that we start doing contact tracing with positive cases as well?
I have good news, and I'm sure you're laughing because I very rarely give you good news. It does not. So no, the ETS does not require contact tracing. So if you have an employee who comes into work and later that night they test positive for COVID, you don't have an obligation under the ETS to do contact tracing. At the same time, however, be mindful that you still have the general duty obligations under OSHA. We don't have specific language or rule that says that OSHA believes that contact tracing is necessary in order to protect employees, and leaving it out of the ETS may indicate they don't believe that, but just be mindful of that factor as well. Okay, next question, Lucy.
So I am a federal contractor who also has over 100 employees. Are both standards applicable to my organization?
Great question. So we knew that there were going to be different entities that would have potentially fall within the different buckets and have multiple different obligations. The good news is that the OSHA ETS very specifically notes that while it covers unionized workforces, and if someone has 100 or more employees, if you are a workforce that is covered by the healthcare ETS, okay, or the safer federal contractor and subcontractor, so the Biden contractor mandate, then the OSHA ETS does not apply. So if you are a federal contractor who is subject to the Biden administration's federal contractor mandate, then the OSHA ETS does not apply to your organization. Lucy, what's our next question?
Do I have to pay people who are out of work because of COVID?
Another really good question, and one that there's been a lot of misinformation about. So if you are covered under the healthcare ETS, then you would have to pay individuals who are out of work up to a certain amount who are out of work related to a positive COVID screen. If, however, this ETS, so the OSHA 100 plus ETS, when the stay is lifted, you do not have to pay individuals who get COVID and who are out of work, but you do have to pay employees for time up to 4 hours to get vaccinated. And then you're also going to have to provide paid leave if an employee has an adverse reaction to the vaccination, so up to 2 days of paid leave. So you don't have to pay individuals who are out of work because of COVID, but those who are away from work as a result of getting the vaccine or an adverse reaction, those individuals would be entitled to payment.
What if an employee provides us with the false vaccine cards? Is our organization liable?
Really good question. And this time I'm going to have a really, really quick and easy answer. And the answer is no. No, your organization is not going to be liable if an employee provides you with a false vaccination card, unless you were aware that the card itself was false. And with that, with an easy answer, Lucy, I think it's a good time for us to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
In a recent survey, investors shared what they felt were the greatest threats to their retirement. It's no surprise the most common threats include stock market volatility, economic uncertainty, conflict in the Middle East, the 2020 presidential impeachment, and election. Unfortunately, there are many threats beyond your control that can affect your retirement savings. At Goldco, a leader in precious metals, the team believes one way to protect your investment portfolio is with physical gold and silver. Goldco has helped thousands of investors safeguard their retirement, especially in times of uncertainty. In fact, if you call 855-971-2006, Goldco will send you a free 1 ounce silver American Eagle coin. And all you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. No obligation. 100% free. Call 855-971-2006 to get your free silver American Eagle coin. That's 855-971-2006. 1-800-273-8006.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today we're taking listener questions and I'm giving you the answers. We are discussing federal vaccine mandates, and we focused a lot on the ETS from OSHA regarding employers with 100 or more employees, but we're going to talk about contractor mandates. We're going to talk about CMS mandates. Lucy, let's jump right back into it. What's our next question?
So the next one is, what obligations does an employer have related to the employee's COVID cards or the test results from COVID tests?
Well, unfortunately, I don't mean to create more work for employers, but you're going to have to keep all of that information confidential. So confidential health files for each of your employees. So you need to keep that information private and confidential. You should have someone who's in charge of the information. And that is really your obligation. You should also be mindful of how collection of this information may interact with any state laws concerning confidential medical information concerning your employees, and treat it in the same vein you would other medical information regarding employees. Okay, Lucy, what's next?
So next question relates to the question about test results. And that is, my understanding is that employees can access other people's information under the OSHA ETS. Is that true?
Not exactly, but there is information that employees can receive about other employees. So they can't receive copies of test results of other employees. They can't see vaccination cards of other employees. But what they would be entitled to as it relates to other employees is the number of employees in their workplace and then the number of individuals who are vaccinated. You wouldn't be entitled to a list to identify who is vaccinated, but just the numbers. So if your workplace has 700 employees and 620 of them are vaccinated, the employee would be entitled to those two numbers, 700 employees, 620 vaccinated, but they wouldn't be entitled to any additional information. Next question, Lucy.
Our next set of questions involves the federal contractor mandate. What is the current status of the federal contractor mandate?
This is a very timely question. So I'm glad this one was asked. So in early December, so actually on December 7th, a nationwide stay was issued regarding the federal contractor mandate. So specifically, that means that just like we have the stay in the OSHA ETS mandate, right now, the federal government, all the agencies, they can't require federal contractors to comply with that contractual term. So it's been stayed. So right now, the mandate has not been struck down. The rules related to the contractor, federal contractor rules has not been struck down, but it has been stayed. So if an individual failed to follow the rules or comply with that contractual term, they would not be subject to exposure or liability while the stay is in place. What's up next, Lucy?
So if the contractor mandate has been stayed, does that mean that if I have a federal contract with a vaccine mandate clause in it, and I have unvaccinated employees, they can continue to work on federal jobs.
That is exactly what it means. So right now, since we have a stay, you would not have to terminate unvaccinated employees who are unentitled to an exemption for a religious or medical reason. So your unvaccinated employees could continue to work on federal jobs. What's the next question, Lucy?
If the stay is lifted, do these obligations only apply to employees working on jobs that are funded by a federal contract?
No. And this is a place where we continue to see a lot of confusion with people saying, yeah, I'll be a federal contractor and I'll take my unvaccinated employees off those jobs and put them on other jobs. But this obligation in the Biden federal contractor mandate applies to all employees. So if you're a covered contractor employee, that's any full-time or part-time employee of a contractor, and they don't have to be working at a covered contractor workplace, like one that's doing a federal job, it's all employees. But great question, Lucy.
So then how does the ADA and employees' medical rights play into a decision not to be vaccinated?
So if an individual is unvaccinated and you're a federal contractor and that employee is unvaccinated because of a disability or a medical reason that restricts their ability to be vaccinated, then you would need to provide an accommodation to the individual. So the ADA is still in effect as it relates to federal contractor and the federal contractor mandate. So you would have to go through the reasonable accommodation dialogue with the employee to determine whether or not you can provide an exception or accommodation from compliance with that policy. What's our next question, Lucy?
Specifically, as an alternative to vaccination, can employees simply be tested for COVID-19 weekly?
So it's a really good question. And this is where it gets really confusing. So you first have to understand what standard is applicable to you. So if you're a federal contractor, the answer is no, not if you don't have exception to the policy under the ADA or Title VII. So if you just aren't vaccinated, right? If you have an employee who's unvaccinated, but they're not legally entitled to an accommodation, they'd not be able to obtain a weekly test as an alternative to the vaccination. They would under the 100 plus OSHA ETS standard, but remember that's not applicable if an individual or an organization is subject to the OSHA ETS mandate. Another long answer to what should be an easy question, Lucy. Sorry about that.
Is there a specific clause that the government contractors can expect to see in the future government contracts?
Yes, but we also are seeing a lot of different language that different entities are using. So different entities have the ability to change up the proposed language. So depending on which agency you contract with, whether or not it's Department of Defense, or maybe you contract with OSHA, whoever you contract with gets to choose the language. But specifically, it's going to say something to the effect of, the contractor shall comply with all guidance, including guidance conveyed through the frequently asked questions that are amended throughout the performance of the contract. And those frequently asked questions are based off of the Safer Federal Workforce Task Force guidance. And it's going to be updated. And you'll recall that this is the only people, when we're talking about contractors, is employers whose contract is above the simplified acquisition threshold.
Well, Tani, this isn't a question from a listener, but what is the simplified acquisition threshold?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question, Lucy. Sorry for ending on that and not further explaining it. It's defined by statute, but more generally, it means over a quarter of a million, except for certain exceptions. So if you believe an exception may be applicable, I would recommend that your organization speak to counsel. But more generally, we're looking at contracts above $250,000.
Donnie, are we talking about every single contract entered into by the government? Even the ones entered into months ago or some more limited segment of government contracts?
Unfortunately, this is another one of my it depends answers. So it's going to be contracts that are awarded after November 14th. So anyone who's been awarded a contract after November 14th, you can expect to see that language in there. But it's not going to apply to contracts that are with Indigenous tribes under the Indian Self-Determination and Education Assistance Act and solicitation for contracts if the performance is outside of the United States. It could be seen in some contracts for manufacturing of products, but under the rule itself, under the Biden rule, it's not specifically included there. With that, Lucy, I know it's hard to believe, but we've got to take another break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. Today, we have been going through listener questions concerning federal vaccine mandates, understanding what employers' obligations are and how to respond to them, and general best practices. Lucy, I think we have time for one or two more questions. Do we have a couple more?
So my last question is regarding the CMS rules. What is the current status of the CMS vaccine mandate?
So I love how you give the super broad question and you save it for last, but I think it makes a ton of sense because we know that we've been seeing news reports that say, yes, this has been stayed, no, this isn't applicable, all those things. Well, the good news is for employers who are in healthcare, who are subject to CMS rules, is that that rule has also been stayed. So right now we have a nationwide stay. We actually have multiple stays that are in effect, but the one that is applicable to most people is going to be the nationwide stay that has been put into effect. And that stay provides that the CMS rules and regulations that would have taken effect as of November 5th are not currently being enforced. And for those of you who are unaware of who this applied to, recall that this applies to different Medicare and Medicaid certified providers. So a whole different list, and they're all set forth within the rule itself. But it applies to eligible staff who work in CMS certified facilities that participate in Medicare and Medicaid programs, and it's regardless of clinical responsibility or patient contact. So unless the employee works 100% remotely and never has contact with patients or other staff, those are the only individuals who would be excluded from the mandate itself. But if you are an administration, it would still cover you. So understanding that obligation, it is really, really important. And one of the big questions that came up after the initial guidance was given is whether or not the mandate applies to visitors. So the staff vaccination requirements apply to Medicare and Medicaid certified facilities that are regulated under conditions of participation or conditions of coverage. And it is to ensure that staff are vaccinated against COVID-19, but it doesn't apply to personal visitors, such as family members or friends. But if there is a contractor that visits the facility on a regular basis, in that situation, CMS was strongly encouraging all individuals and families to be vaccinated. So your organization, the vaccine mandate would be applicable to your staff, but it's not going to be applicable to patient visitors within your organization. So that's the big question that we saw that followed the CMS mandate. But remember that currently the CMS mandate has been stayed. So as of right now, I don't want to say don't worry about it. A lot of people who have the CMS mandate are currently operating under the healthcare ETS. So they already have in place a number of different precautions and rules. I understand that there has been a lot of information during the course of today's episode. If you've missed anything, please check out the podcast where you can pause me and you can go back and listen to advice or guidance regarding any of these questions or concerns. Lucy, thank you so much for helping to weed through all the listener comments to provide the ones that are most applicable to our listeners. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
And now, your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Hi, this is Tawny Alvarez at Verrill. Let's pause and think about your highest performing employee. Your all-star, the employee who, while not irreplaceable, will certainly adversely affect your operations were they to leave. Does the employee have confidential information about your business? Do they know information about your profits and margins? The real question is, have you adequately protected your company? A confidentiality agreement or non-compete agreement are, depending on your industry, something you may want to consider. While more and more states are regulating the enforceability of non-compete agreements, a confidentiality agreement will permit you to restrict an employee's ability to share your company's confidential business information with competitors in the future. Contact a member of Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group to discuss more.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.